Hello and welcome to the Hockey Strength Podcast, the official podcast of SCAF, the Strength and Conditioning Association of Professional Hockey. My name is David Rosales, and today I'm joined by Mike Potenza, along with Ray Bear, for episode 5 of our SCAF Alumni Series. If you haven't tuned into our Alumni Series, each episode we interview a former NHL strength coach to hear about their experiences, lessons learned, stories, difficulties, challenges, successes, working in the NHL and beyond. For the last 11 years, Ray has worked for the U.S. military as a human performance coordinator, which explains why he's not on social media and why most of us probably haven't heard of him. Before that, though, he was the head strength and conditioning coach for the Atlanta Thrashers from 2001 all the way until 2010, and before that served as a minor league strength and conditioning coordinator for the Atlanta Braves in baseball, and also worked for the Kansas City Royals in the minor league system. So Ray has a lot to offer from varying experiences from the NHL to the tactical setting, to baseball as well, and some of the similarities and differences. We go really deep on topics like mentorship, on what the coordinator role is like, on what tactical training is like, and how that has similarities and differences for hockey. So this is a different episode. We talk less about the NHL, I think, and more about strength and conditioning field in general, and Ray's a really interesting guy, and I really appreciate about his time. So without further ado, here is Ray Bear. One last small tech thing. There was a bit of staticky on somebody's mic, and it's not really a big deal. It's not too distracting, but don't worry, your speakers are fine. It's just on our end, so a little bit of staticky comes in and out, and it's not too bad, but just a heads up. Welcome back to the Hockey Strength Podcast. We are here with another episode of the SCAF Alumni Series. So I'm back with Mike Potenza, and our guest today is Ray Bear. Ray, how are you?
Good, man. Thanks for having me.
Thank you so much for being here. Why don't you start off? You have a very unique path, which I'm sure we're going to go in all sorts of directions with. So why don't you start by telling our audience what your path in strength and conditioning has been and how you got started?
Sure. It was a unique path. It was starting off in out of high school, going into the Army, did a short stint in the Army, and then went to college right out after that. Still in the National Guard doing that. While I was in college, I actually was in athletic training. I did a stint with the minor league team that was about 45 minutes away in Huntington, West Virginia, the Huntington Blizzard. Charlie Huddy was our head coach at the time. And so I did about a year and a half there. I graduated from college during that time and went to the Kansas City Royals as a strength and conditioning coach. So that was the start of my hockey journey. I didn't have a clue I was actually going to go back into hockey, but you know, as God would have it, it was kind of funny how it came full circle. And did my stint with the Kansas City Royals for 2 years, went to graduate school, did a stint as an assistant strength coach at Ohio University, and then became the minor league strength and conditioning coordinator for the Braves, Atlanta Braves. While I was with Atlanta, that's whenever the Atlanta Thrashers came to be. And after their second season, the GM for them, Don Waddell, who is now with the Carolina Hurricanes, opened up the position for strength and conditioning. And John Schuerholz, who was the GM with the Braves, knew I had a hockey background, recommended me for the job. I interviewed with Don, ended up getting it and staying in the NHL for 9 years. Thought it was, you know, it's kind of family, and Mike had talked about this earlier, but with family and everything, I was ready just to do the family thing. And the Army opened up a position for special forces. And so I came over here and became the director of human performance for Third Special Forces Group here. And I've been here, it's going on 11 years now. So that's kind of in a nutshell what it was like.
And what was it like going from baseball to hockey? Are there, what were the differences, the similarities? What skills did you learn as a baseball strength coach that you carried over into hockey?
Well, the guys are different. I mean, they're, you know, we're dealing in baseball. You have obviously a lot of Americans and a lot of, but you deal a lot with Latin American players, you know, and so they have all of them, you know, have unique sets, but baseball is different, especially during that time. We're talking about, you know, the late 90s. So it was a little different mentality. You still had old school coaches that didn't really like strength and conditioning, and strength and conditioning was kind of, you know, just really coming into prominence about that time. And then, so you had a different work ethic, if you will. I mean, they work hard, but you just got to go, you know, differently with it. But that's where I had my first taste of really dealing with a higher level guys, that you really need to listen to what they have to say, and how they baseball, you can get into a little bit more individual, because some guys like to do upper body stuff, some guys don't. But with hockey, I mean, that hockey is really that blue collar sport where those guys go all out, and there wasn't they want to know the why, but they're going to give you everything they have. Not saying baseball didn't, but I was one strength coach with the Braves for a whole organization, so I didn't get to see them a lot. It was a different time frame. And then going to the NHL, you know, having that taste in the East Coast League way back, I knew the type of guys that we would be dealing with, but dealing with the European player was a little bit different than dealing with the North American player. But I got to learn a lot from them, because they brought over a little bit more unique style of training that was really helped me develop my philosophy as we went, you know, working with power and things with baseball, you know, third base, first base, your corner guys, that's your power positions. You learn power, but rotational. So I took a lot of rotational things from baseball, brought it over to hockey, and it really did transfer pretty good. But obviously, you know, being on the ice is different, but you still get the rotational, you still get the power, you still get the strength kind of mentality that we brought over. But you know, there was a lot of similarities, but I'll just tell you, you know, the training is there's a lot of differences, a whole lot of differences. I'd say more differences than similarities whenever it comes to, you know, how you train and maybe the intensity in which you train.
Ray, were you going into brand new situations from a training culture standpoint at the time of being in the industry? Was strength and conditioning really new to the baseball world? Was it really new, kind not really new, but to the hockey world? But there weren't many strength coaches in hockey at the time, right? Every team might have had one, but nobody had an assistant. Nobody had a minor leagues NHL or American League system of strength and conditioning. And even into your time in the military, which I love, by the way, I think that's an area of performance that we as professionals we need to give back to. Like, those guys need our help. Our tier one assets need our help, and it's nice to see that they're growing those programs now versus 10 years ago. So every situation you've been in, has it been like the start of a training program, including the military?
You know, looking back at it, yeah, it really has, I guess. Baseball had strength and conditioning, but they were just starting to get it at all levels on certain teams. The Royals, we had we had a minor league coordinator, major league guy, and then four minor league strength coaches. So that was kind of, you know, that was really new. I was one of the first ones in the minor league system for the Royals. Now with the Braves, I was the only strength coach. I didn't have an assistant. I had an assistant my first year there, but he stayed in one location. I covered everything else. And then my second year there, I was it, you know. So, I mean, that mentality, just trying to, it's hard, you know, you guys know, it's hard to implement whenever you're only one and you're not there all the time. It's hard to get your, you know, really production. But we, you know, we were able to put in programs, coaches helped with that. But, and then you're right, Mike, going into hockey, every team had a strength coach whenever I started. Some were pure strength coaches. Some had dual roles, athletic trainer, strength coach. But it was really, the minor leagues didn't have that system in place yet. So there wasn't the strength and conditioning and really the importance placed on it at that time. And that was in the early 2000s. So, and then coming to the military, that was totally foreign, because I was the first one here, you know, so that was just totally different. And trying to build that from the ground up, and we're still building it up. So yeah, I guess, you know, just trying. I've always been in, looking back at it, I didn't even realize it, but been in on a lot of a ground floor, really on every level of some sort, you know, maybe not the ground level, but right at the cusp at the beginning. And it's been great to see the evolution of our program, of our profession, I'm sorry, to, you know, where it is now. I mean, strength and conditioning in hockey is very prevalent. You got strength coaches, you got assistants all at the NHL level, and then the minor leagues are taking, and they're all taking it serious. So it's just been great to see that grow.
Yeah. I always said, and even the last couple podcasts, I think David can agree with it. Like, when you go and you get your degrees and maybe your advanced degrees, it was always like, okay, I need the college strength and conditioning positions were vast. Like, that was the biggest pool of what you had available to pick from. But now the military has been a tremendous explosion of resources and positions that, you know, it's a great spot to pick from, you know, because they're treating them like professional teams and some like college teams, and that's what they should get to eventually, right?
Yeah, the military is really, it took us really 10 years to, you know, where we're at now, but it's being looked at from a big, and I'm going to talk the whole military, but really the Army's taking it serious, where conventional units are having programs built with strength and conditioning. And I mean, the jobs are vast out there for strength and conditioning coaches. It's a great time to start getting into the field or be in the field, because the military sees the value. You know, the pay is really good and very competitive. You know, on the special operations side, which I'm on, it's, you know, we're still growing the program. But yeah, man, it's really on the military side. They're taking it very serious. We treat our guys like the college and pro athletes. We have all the same stuff y'all have. But we brought that over to this area from, pro sports. And if it wouldn't have been for what I've learned there, and dealing with our guys, you know, dealing with hockey players, and baseball for me, just dealing with those, you know, tier one athletes, if you will, at the highest levels, that prepared me for what we did here. And if I didn't have those experiences, you know, because we're in a people business, you know, if people don't trust you in strength and conditioning, you're not going to get the most out of them. They got to trust you. Yeah. You got to treat them the right way. And same thing here, these guys have to trust you before they're actually going to, do what you ask them to do. And, they know you have their best interests at heart. So, I will tell you this though, being where I'm at for the past 10 years has made me a way better strength coach than what I was in the NHL. So I feel, I wish I would have had the skills I do now that I would have had then, you know, and put it into practice back then, because I think I could have been more effective, you know, early on. But that's just, I think everybody can say that wherever they've been, they've learned more stuff, and, you know, so it's been a great experience. You know, we have great opportunities to learn, bring people in, people like you, Mike, learning from that, and being able to apply it here. But, you know, dealing with injuries different way, dealing with amputees, keeping them in the fight. I mean, that's a whole different game, probably a different podcast. But it's been great to really learn here, especially from these guys. And what's even been better is just be able to give back. Just like you said, it's been able to give back to these guys. You know, it means a lot. It means a lot.
Mentioned, and this is definitely a theme amongst our alumni, is talking about how important being a good communicator and a good people person is in strength and conditioning. What are some keys that you think about, some strategies, some experiences that have helped you develop trust and become a person first before becoming their strength coach?
I think listening, you know, I mean, the thing is, everybody likes somebody to listen to, you know, or listen to them. So we all, us included, you know, just we all have things we like to tell or say. So really listening to the guys, what's worked for them in the past, what is working for them now, trying to help them develop, you know, their program, but also based on, you still got a big group of guys and it's hard to individualize everything, or at least it was for me back then, because I was a party of one, and But really listening and developing that trust. But the other part is they've got to know, especially in the NHL, they've got to know that there is a line, because you're still a coach and you're still, you know, responsible for performance. But they also have to know that you have their best interest at heart, because if they're going to perform at their best, the team's going to do the best, you know. So trying to convey that, and also knowing that they know that you're not going to go run to a coaching staff or trainer or whatever it may be to whenever they confide in you for an injury or whatever it may be, you know. So you got to build that trust with them. Once you build the trust, they're going to work harder for you. So I think that was the biggest thing that I learned, and I still am, you know, implement that today. Just sit down and talk to people, you know. Don't elevate yourself into a higher status. Just be humble. And I mean, we're in a service position, you know, that's what we do. And I think Mike can really attest to that. We're in a service driven profession. And I try to keep that in mind. You know, we're not higher than anybody, and we're not lower. We're just in a service driven. So let's listen to what they have to say and try to put that into practice. So
I always say I couldn't sell anything. Like, I'm not a good salesman, you know. Like, I couldn't sell heaters to people living in Antarctica, you know what I mean? But when it comes to training, I guess that's the thing you're most passionate about. So it's easy to sell things, you know. So with you, Ray, like, there's so many influences for the military athlete. Like, there's CrossFit, because they're type A, because they're a go, 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 I have the blinders on, I want to train really hard. There's mountain athlete, there's military athlete, there's SEAL Fit, there's CrossFit, you know, there's all these programs that just generate more horsepower to the engine. But you have guys who may be great mission ready soldiers and are broken, but you got to keep them in the fight, but they need a program that's not really like CrossFit, you know? So for your skill set as the salesman, you know, on the performance side, how have you been able to, you know, you've already said one of the things, build trust, but what's some of the things that you go through and try to help that athlete understand, okay, the answer is not CrossFit or something like that. Not to say that CrossFit's good or bad, you know, I'll be agnostic on that, but give us a little bit of background on how you get them to buy into your program.
Really, the proof is in the pudding, if you say, you know. So we have a program, it's solid, it's based on scientific foundation. When people talk to us about all these different programs, we give them the scientific reason for why we do what we do. And then whenever they start asking, you know, the questions of, well, why does this program do it like this? Why does this program do it like this? And I always go back to really the science, but the experience behind it and the results of it that we have seen over time. And just ask them, hey, give this a chance, do this. And if the results aren't for you, we'll refine it. If they still aren't for you, you know, I mean, you got your programs out there to do. And more times than not, it sells itself, because they start seeing, you know, the differences being made with the types of programs that we're doing. We get very specific based on their job, based on their job skills. And then we have, you know, the general type of workout that we do whenever they're not getting ready to go off the deployment and stuff. So, you know, just really laying down, I don't like to bash other programs. I try to stay away from that, you know, because everybody can get into all these debates. We just try to prove and do what we do. And usually if they're being passed up by somebody doing our program and they're not, then that brings them in too. So that just that yeah. Word of mouth from others will bring them in, because that holds a lot of weight too.
I think too, when it's planned comprehensively and longitudinally, and I think, you know, I think there's a lot of like solace in that, and the fact that, like, all right, Ray's got me on this program that has, you know, it's a long-term plan. It's not just, okay, what are we doing today? You know, what workout do I pick today on the calendar? Right. So, yeah. Which is definitely reassuring for the athlete.
Yeah.
You also mentioned, I think Mike said this phrase, ground level, that you've had to build up that military strength conditioning program. And you were the first one in that position. You were also, I'm guessing, the first one in your position with the Thrashers. So what's your experience coming in where you're not even filling someone else's role, but you're starting a new role?
Yeah, so going back to Thrashers, actually, there was a strength coach before me for a couple years, but it was a brand new franchise. So, you know, he didn't have a big chance to put a big stamp. So it was really revamping a little bit there. But here, I mean, here it was, we had no equipment. We had no nothing. So I walked into a program with, and I tell this story, I walk into a program and I had my my backpack. I had my personal computer, which I couldn't even bring into the building. And no equipment. So it was really trying to carve out space to do what we do. Walk in the door and they say, what are you here for and what do you do? So that was really eye-opening, you know, to really start it that way. And now, you know, seeing after where we are now, having a fairly large staff, building a new building, and we move into in June. It's taken a long time to get there, but it's just being relentless, you know. I mean, you just got to, whenever they tell you, well, don't worry about that, and just like you was talking about, Mike, we got these other programs, we've got this, we got that, just turn a deaf ear to it, do what you do, show that you care about people, and it grows itself. And we grew the program from the ground up. Same thing with Atlanta, you grow it from the ground up, you know, guys have to trust you, and then word of mouth takes off. And then next thing you know, you don't have enough room for everybody. And it's hiring the right people. You know, the one thing I'll tell you, and Mike, you'll probably vouch for this, is a program, and a program is not the equipment and it's not the building. A program is the people you put in place to be able to run the program. And that's what we were able to do. We were able to put in good people who cared about the guys that were serving, both in the NHL and here. And that's really the basis for the program. You get that in place, equipment only enhances it. Building only enhances all of it. But you got to have the right people in place to do the program properly.
I want to add one little thing to that, like starting a new program. I talked to Adam Virgil a few months ago. He created a new position when he came in with the Rangers in sports science. When I was in juniors my last season, I kind of became the strength coach. And just for a lot of strength coaches out there, even if there's not a position, a lot of times, like you say, Ray, like if you care, if you know you can provide value, then kind of get your foot in the door and be like, hey, this is a position that can provide, that can help our team, help our group, help anybody. And so kind of taking that initiative to become the strength and conditioning coach of whatever group you want to train.
I couldn't tell you. I think, and Mike, I'm sure you had similar, you know, similarities with this, but advice like that for a new strength, I couldn't tell you how many times I've worked jobs for free, no money, just getting the experience. I mean, with my own money, driving back and forth and putting in a lot of hours and going to whatever camp just to volunteer, because that's where you gain your experience, but that's also where people see your work ethic. In this business, it's not about who you know, it's about who knows you. So if I have a job opening, I'm going to reach out to the people that I know from my past that have worked hard. They have all the skills and characteristics I'm looking for because they just volunteered or they put in the hard work. So that's how you build it from the ground up. People know you. And that's how I got into baseball. People knew me. It wasn't because I knew them. They knew me and just what I was able to provide, you know, and they took a gamble on me, and I'm thankful it worked out, you know, but that's my experience with it.
Yeah. I feel like money is kind of obviously especially for interns, like should interns get paid? I think one way to frame this, like I've done an unpaid internship, is money is an exchange of something that society's deemed has some sort of value. But other things have value. Like you said, if you're connecting with people, what value do you place on that relationship that could then help you down the line? What value do you place on the skills you learn in that environment where you're working for free? So a reframe is just to think of it as money is something with value, but it's not the only thing with value. And wherever you're working, you can, if you're like building skills and building relationships, a lot of times you'll then get the financial reward some point down the line.
100%. Yeah. That will come down the line. I remember when I was in Atlanta, I had unpaid internships in the summer to help out. But I had a couple of people say, well, I can't just leave my job at Subway, for example, just to come down there for, you know, 3-4 weeks to do that with you. And I said, well, enjoy working at Subway for the rest of your life. You know, I mean, you got to be able to put in and be willing to make those sacrifices, because in the long run, to get where you want to go, to get to the highest level you want to go, you've got to make sacrifices. And money's not everything, but it definitely helps. Don't get me wrong, but money's not everything. It's also about putting in the sacrifice, and you'll get rewarded down the line. Just be patient. There's a lot of people out there fighting for the same thing you are. In the NHL, there's, you know, not that many teams for not that many positions for a small select few. And I was very fortunate to be, you know, one of those, you know, few to have one of those jobs. And I'm very thankful for that. But I had to do a lot, and I'm sure, Mike, you did too. Yeah, we had to do a lot to get there, you know, and it paid off.
Those experiences compound over time. That's what, you know, David, you said it. You may not make any money doing it, but the experiences and the network and the relationships and what you learn away from the textbook, in a way, those are what got me here. I think, Ray, you would probably agree for yourself too. Like those help you climb the ladder.
Yeah, I definitely love to see our industry, if we could, how we could support people who are not as privileged as, I'm going to speak to myself, like I'm very privileged and was able to work for free. Just like, cause I had money saved and I had family who supports me, but I'd love our industry to move forward and how we could help people of color and people in underprivileged communities also. But for sure, like, if you have the means, like working for free is something you probably have to do to move up in our field in a lot of aspects.
One thing I'll tell you, I had interns come in from out of state, in Atlanta, and, they lived in my house. You know, I couldn't pay them, but I wanted to give them every opportunity they could. So lived in my house. I fed them everything I could do. There wasn't monetary gain, but you know, you do what you do because they want to be there. I want to help them be there and be successful. So I felt like it was my duty to help them. And I was very fortunate. I had a great wife who didn't mind doing that. But at the same time, those are ways you can give back. You know, I mean, we're in the people business, you know, help people. That's, they got to want, you know, they got to show that they're going to give it. They're going to give me everything they got. But at the same point, man, it's, you know, there's ways we can do it.
I love that story. That's awesome.
Thanks. Shifting a little bit, right, to the programming side, like I was, a couple of aha moments for me was like the span of age that I had to deal with coming from college, coming from Wisconsin. And now I'm in the NHL and I got 18-year-olds and, you know, and I got 40-year-olds now. I got a 41-year-old. I had two 41-year-olds a year ago, you know? So that programming just becomes vast, and it's something that can sneak up on you. I guess when you get to this level, it's like, you really don't think about it until guys are fighting over the stereo to play music. And then you got Guns N' Roses, and then you got Travis Scott or whatever his name is, like on the radio now, back and forth, you know? So, and even in my military experience with the pararescue men here, it went from 21 to 55. So it was a whole, like, oh my God, like this is different. You know, this is something that's new to me. Even tell me a little bit about your experience that you're dealing with it now, I guess, and how your programming has to kind of pivot and change. And you're thinking about a bigger sample group, I guess.
Well, personal experience, I'm 48 now. So, I mean, I can't train like I used to, you know, I got to break myself. But that, you hit a spot on, you know, and going into baseball and, you know, and into hockey, really in hockey and the NHL, you're right, Mike, man, you got that big span. And later in my career with Atlanta, I mean, yeah, I was sitting in some 40s and, you know, a 50-year-old. So, you know, I mean, you had a huge span. Your programming has got to change. Once you get the older guys in hockey, though, they've been around for a while. They've went through a lot of training programs. So for me to say, I'm going to tell you exactly what to do at your age, that's really going to help you. You know, that, well, first of all, you'll get shut out real quick. So you talk to them, you know, what's been working, what's, you know, and then that, I was very fortunate and said, they asked me, well, what do you have for them? What do you think? You know, and then, okay, that opened the dialogue to be able to set their programming a little bit different. They say, yeah, I probably can't do this because of this injury this year. So we got to change that up. But whenever you're dealing in the military and you've got exactly what you said, 21 to, you know, in the mid 50s, and they're all on the same team, and they've got to be, but they've got to be able to do the same things a lot. It's very parallel to hockey that way, you know, but you've got to change your mentality of the way they change the old, train the older guy versus the younger guy. And that was a big shift for me here. And that's how I got, you know, I got better here, because these guys want to listen to you and they want to, they'll run through a wall for you. And if you tell them to do something, they're going to do it. So you got to be careful, you know, and you got to make sure it's the right thing and the safe thing, and you're not going to break them. But I'm still learning. I mean, because, you know, you get all different, you get in the military, you get all different ability levels as well, especially in special forces. You get a lot of different ability levels. So they're not all the NHL level, high level guy that's at the top of their game. And they are here, but in the NHL, you know, I mean, they're very skilled at what they do. Here, we have all different kinds of skills, you know, and they're here for a reason. They're good at what they do. They are very mentally strong. NHL players are mentally strong, and just in a different way. It's a, there's a lot of comparisons. I compare the, my hockey guys with my military guys a lot. You just don't, you don't understand how often I do that. They say, what's the closest sport that you've trained that's going to be here? And I think hockey is probably, you know, that close, but programming is always evolving, you know, with me and especially my staff. We have a lot of conversations about programming for different guys, different teams, things like that. And age is a big thing and always comes into play.
Is the physical gap bigger in the military? Meaning, you know, from my, for about lack of a better term, my best physical guy to my worst physical guy, it's not that much, but in the military, do you find it bigger? Their skill sets and their mental toughness is there. And obviously probably the tip of the spear, but are you getting guys that, you know, hey, he's not that great physically, but you got some beasts in the military, bigger span in your experience?
Yeah, it's definitely a bigger span than in, mm-hmm. in hockey, but yeah, you get a bigger, you do, but I think a lot of times what you get also is your older guys have ran themselves in the ground a lot. So they've got, they have more injuries you got to work around, you know? So, and they're worn down a little bit, and, but they know it, you know, that's the thing. And then you get the younger guys, and the younger guys are trying to prove themselves, and you get a little, you do get a bigger span. You know, the veteran guys are going to give you everything they've got. But it's taken us 10 years to get into a place where I want to give you everything I got the smart way. I need to keep up with that guy, but I'm probably going to have to go about it a different way to keep up with them, you know? So there's a lot of that going on. There's a lot of more dialogue than there used to be. But the ability levels, yeah, you definitely see that a lot more here than you do in hockey.
What are some recommendations you would give to a young strength coach, and or what are some bad recommendations that you hear often?
Oh, wow. Recommendations, first of all, you know, seek out a great mentor. You know, I mean, just learn. Something I wish I did more when I was younger is shut up and listen. You know, you don't know everything. Books don't teach you everything. And, you know, I had to learn that along the way. And I say a lot of us do, but just be quiet, take it in and listen. One of the best pieces of advice I got was from Ethan Reeve. He was at Ohio University, one of my mentors, and he said, develop your philosophy, you know, take everything that you've learned and develop your philosophy. And a philosophy is things you want to do, but also things other people do that you don't think would fit into yourself and you don't want to do, but you learn from everything, you know, from everybody. You're going to take good and bad from everybody and decide, are you going to put it as yours or not? So, you know, I think that's some of the best advice I would have. Just be quiet, listen, develop your philosophy that's going to work for you. Bad advice that you're going to make a lot of money in this profession. I think that's the worst, you know, worst advice. Get into the profession for the money. That's not happening.
That's just the truth.
we're not in this business for the money, that's for sure. I wish we were, but I don't know, off the top of my head, I can't think of really, you know, bad advice that I've heard out there. I've heard a lot of young kids try to put out advice that's been bad, but as far as somebody get mentoring somebody, I really haven't heard a lot. I try to focus more on the positive, I guess.
What if you have strategies or ideas or tactics for people to find a good mentor?
Well, I think in the business, you know, you start talking to people in the business because, you know, Mike would be a great person to either be a mentor or be able to refer people in their area to be a mentor, you know. A lot of times I think the consensus is I can't get in touch with that strength coach. I can't talk to him. I can't do this. Realistically, we all love to talk, you know, and I welcome if people email me and want to just talk shop or something like that. You know, reach out to some of these guys and girls. I mean, there's great female strength coaches out there. But typically if they're at the higher college level or in a NHL position, you know, I mean, they know what they're doing, but they know we all, it's a small community, you know, we know who to refer people over to. You know, I think also whenever you start talking to people, just be that judge of character, don't fall in love with the fact that they're at a higher level, listen to what they have to say. And you should be able to decipher, you know, whether that's going to be a mentor for you or not. Cause everybody, you know, people are going to listen to me and I'm not going to fit everybody's mold of who they want to learn under, you know, or talk to. Everybody has different personalities. So, you know, be that people person and just try to use some common sense, man. Just, you know, whenever it comes to it, people don't use enough common sense nowadays. There's no statistic to say who's going to be a good mentor and who's not, you know?
Yeah.
So I guess that's a long-winded way of saying it's hard to tell who that exact good mentor is going to be.
I pull, David, I pull from, at least from my mentor group and my network of professionals that are, and you know, pretty much they're all older than me, away from the X and O's side. Like it's their experiences. Have they had to deal with this situation and have they had to deal with a difficult athlete? Have they had to deal with, you know, an injured athlete for the first time, for the first injury of that athlete's career, where the psychology of it may be the, man, I've never been hurt. This is never going to get better. My career is over kind of thing, you know, or dealing with, it's a big question, right, that we ask our guests is tell us a difficult situation that you've had to tell management or command or coaches, you know, what they don't want to hear. Like the guy's not ready. This guy's not in shape, or this guy's not going to get to the point where you want him to as soon as you think he will, you know? So it's dealing with those experiences, those coaching experiences more so than the X and O's. You know, I do have those guys in my network, but at the same time, the other stuff just keeps coming up more so than a programming concern in season or off season, right? I think those are easy to navigate, not devaluing them, but there's bigger fish to fry in a way.
Mike, I think you hit it on the head, man. That was it's a great, great point. The experience, a mentor is going to give you their experiences of how to handle things. They're going to give you a little bit X's and O's as you go, but I think, man, you hit it right on the head, man. Just find a person you're comfortable talking to who's been in the business that's tried and true. A guy who's been you know, at one place and then another, and they're only there about a year or so and they keep popping around, man, maybe not the best mentor, but a guy who's been established in the business, been in one place for a while, they're going to have experiences they're going to be able to tell you about and to guide you along the way. And man, thanks for bringing that up, Mike. I kind of overlooked that. So that's perfect.
I'll give one quote. I don't know who it's from, probably some book I read, but, a teacher is someone you know what you want to learn from them specifically. A mentor is someone who you're not sure what you need to know, but you know you whatever it is, you're going to learn it from them. I like that.
Yeah, quote. Very true.
Yeah, I like that. Kind of to build on that, Ray, tell us about some tough experiences you know, and early on in your coaching career, they are tough when you have to deal with management and coaches and telling them the difficult news, you know, breaking the bad news to them. Tell us a little bit about any experiences you can share. De-identified, you know, obviously.
Oh, but, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, but the tough ones that you've had to have, but you have to stand your ground on the coaching side and say, you know what, I know you want this guy for tomorrow's game, but it's not going to happen. We need to slow cook this guy's injury or something to that nature, you know?
Oh man, I had a lot. They want a guy back immediately, and you got to put the ball in their court. So had several guys in Atlanta that, you know, via groin injury or via whatever injury it was. And you're nervous because you got to go in and tell the head coach, you know, and you, along with the trainer, and you guys go together or whoever it's on and say, listen, this guy, you put him back in, there's a good chance he's going to be, you know, he's going to injure himself. Or some tougher questions, I think, too, Mike, is telling a coach he's wrong about his philosophy on how I should be training people. That's probably the most difficult thing I ever had to deal with.
Yep.
You know, baseball, I had to deal with pitching coaches that were old school, and this is the way I need to be training. They don't need to be doing all this. And I had to have those candid conversations. Same thing with in hockey, whenever you tell a coach, and I've had this happen several times, that he's not ready. He's on the cusp, but he's not ready. He's not in shape to play. I'm afraid he's going to get an injury, and you know, he'll play himself into shape. I've had those conversations, said, no, I think you're wrong. You know, I had to stand up for that. And then you wonder if you have a job whenever you walk out. So, but luckily I've always had great coaches that really, we had good conversations, about why, you know, but, I think the bigger conversation for me was always trying to tell coaches, about training, that they thought they knew more about it than I did. And those were harder conversations than going in and telling a coach, hey, he's just not in shape. We're coming out of training camp. Listen, I don't know what he did in the off season, but he's not in the shape you think he's in, you know. Those weren't too hard for me. It was more of the, you know, the other interaction.
Yeah, that's an interesting the interesting point too that you make is we're kind of in that we're educating coaches on the how to train, you know. I had one coach with 25 years experience say, hey, we're going to work on speed today, and I got heart rate monitors on the guys, and I'm on the bench, and he's doing a drill for 45 seconds, and I'm like, that's not speed, like, right. You know, and you have to walk them through, and it's a very, I guess, elementary discussion for on the strength coach's side, but at the same time you're having it, you know, with a experienced coach. So it's interesting in our role now. I think we're coaching coaches, right? Especially the old guard. The new guard are athletes that you had, you know, Ray, you probably, how many coaches do you know right now in sport that are you had as athletes, right? I think there's that transition coming. So they speak strength coach a little bit better, but that is part of the job. And those are part of the hard conversations. David, we haven't brought it up yet on this podcast or one of our past ones, but yeah, when you're trying to educate the coach and tell them, you got to kind of do it this way because this is what the science is, then, you know, put your helmet on and you're right, back out of the coach's room and see if you got a job tomorrow. But
have you ever regretted having one of those conversations? Like, you know, it's going to be hard and like, it's going to might put you in some hot water, but at the end of those conversations, did they always end up having like a net positive benefit? Or are there,
not always.
Yeah. I guess my question is, are there times where you have to kind of like, quote, read the room and be like, actually, like, this is not the place to try to educate my coach right now?
Yep. Had that.
Mayday, mayday.
Yeah. Walk in. Yeah. You walk out. It's like, you know, that was not good. I was just stupid. I should not have went. I knew where that was going. You know, and that's some of my bullheadedness going. I've got to say it, you know, I shouldn't, but I'm going to say it anyway. I've had several of those.
Yeah, that's I'd imagine a tough situation to navigate for sure. And I don't even know how you'd, there's no real way to teach that. I think you just have to be a, you know, good social human. And that just comes with a lot of repetition and practice and attention to detail in social environments. Would you guys agree with that?
I think you have to stand your ground and be firm. Like, you can't go in there kind of tippy-toeing. You know, if you have an issue, you don't have to go and tear the paint off the walls because the coach is probably going to do that anyway. You just have to have some sort of resolve and be like, okay, I'm going to get through telling him the bad news, and then I'm going to try to explain it as he comes down from the moon, you know. So there is an art of it, and I guess a strategy, but you know, you can't dip your toe in the water and kind of think, give the maybe vibe off of it. It's got to be like, here's what I'm thinking, here's why, here's how it's going to affect us in the long run or not.
You got to be confident in what you say. Just mm-hmm. You got to come not there's a difference between confidence and cockiness. Come across confident and listen to what they have to say. Typically, it's not a big confrontation. It typically is not, but sometimes you'll have that. But just be confident in what you say, and you're the one that has to live with yourself afterwards.
Ray, one last tactical question that came up earlier on is that you mentioned there are a lot more opportunities now in the tactical strength conditioning space. What resources, people, places that strength coaches who would be interested in learning more about that side of the field, where can they learn more?
Google it. Seriously, just if they want to learn more, just tactical strength coach, Army strength coach, Air Force strength coach, special operations strength coach. The internet's, you know, being flooded with stuff. I'm sure if you put in special operations strength and conditioning, my name's probably going to pop up somewhere. Just because I've just not because I'm good at what I do, it's just because I've been here for so long, you know. But they can go to the internet. There's a lot of websites that's out there that's advertising. Indeed, you know, they have. I know that a lot of the companies are advertising jobs on those positions. So there's all kinds of resources now that was not there 10 years ago. The big thing is just do a search engine. You're going to find it.
That Google, what a service. What a service they provide.
I got one more question for Ray. And it's kind of a cool, it's going to be cool to get your perspective, Ray, because now you are a performance director, right? And I guess your peers, like guys like myself, are trying to get to that level because that position's coming. It's out there, you know, and hockey's transitioning into it and other sports have it, but define the role for us. It means a lot of different things to a lot of different sports and people, but define the role for us as you do it and what it is and what it is not, because I know some guys like Ben Peterson was in hockey for a little while. Now he's with the 49ers right up the road from us, right? He's on the floor very little, but he's orchestrating a ton of stuff in the background, whether it be medical, whether it be monitoring, all those kinds of things. So share with us your what is and what is not about this performance director role.
Well, what it's not is being an expert in every position. You know, what it is being able to maneuver a lot of pieces and be able to manage a lot of domains that you probably don't have a lot of expertise in. So I'm not on the floor anymore. I can't get on the floor to train. I'm sitting behind a desk. I'm in meetings and I'm doing, if they have questions about the program, I've got to portray that. So you need to know what all the departments are doing that's pertinent. But that don't mean I tell them what they're doing. I help them make decisions. And I also know, I don't know what I don't know. I need them to tell me and be able to make me smart on things so that I can talk intelligently to the people who are higher than us that make these decisions. So, you know, just being able to communicate well, being able to talk to people about what they do and not, you know, think you're an expert in it. My background, obviously, strength and conditioning. I know sports medicine. That was my, you know, with my schooling, but I've also got sports psychology. I also have a diet, you know, dietitians. I also have behavioral health. I also have, you know, you name it. I got a wide range of things that I'm in charge of. And I just need them to tell me what they're doing so that I can support them and move things forward. So I'm not micromanaging. I'm not that type of person. I let people do what they're going to do. But I need to make decisions and I've got to know. So I think, you know, just being able to portray that to the other people and letting them know I'm not stepping on your toes. I need to know what you want done. What are you working on? If it's, you know, I'm glaring obvious that that's not the way we need to go, I'll obviously, you know, have that conversation. But for the most part, we hire people in these positions that are experts in their field for a reason. I want them to do their job. I just need to step back and be able to manage the whole thing. If I'm in on the day-to-day, doing day-to-day tasks in my current position, then I'm not doing my current position. I just can't. I've got to be able to step back and make those, you know, decisions. So, and this is still a learning, you know, really learning curve. I stepped into the position without having managed a staff really before, and I've had to learn this over 10 years. So I'm still learning, and I mess up every day. Trust me, I mess up every day, but trying to keep those to a minimum and try to maximize what everybody's trying to do. And the other thing is too, as the one thing that I think as a director, whether it's in hockey or anything, the bottom line with all of it is not my agenda. If we're not servicing our guys that we're here to service and doing them the service and making them better, then it don't matter what we're doing. You know, we're doing everything wrong. We've got to keep that in mind. And as long as we keep our focus and that's the main goal, then other things are going to fall in place.
Was it tough to disconnect from the being a strength coach role to now absolutely taking over? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's where I lived for, you right. know, for 20 years. So yeah, absolutely it was.
Yeah.
I still go out and walk around the floor. Don't get me wrong. You know, I still got to get my fix somehow, but at the same point, it's very hard to disconnect. You know, I mean, that's what I love to do. I love what I'm doing now. Don't get me wrong. But as we get older in our field, we strive to get that higher level so that we're not on the floor all the time. You know, I mean, you know, whenever I'm 60 plus years old, I don't want to be on the floor, you know, lifting all the time. That's just me. I still want to be out there with the guys, but at the same point, I still want to, just like you said, get to that next level. I think we all strive to do that.
I appreciate that. That's one of the best, you know, answers and exchanges I think we've had, because this role is here. This role, whether it be in any sport, it's here, and it's something that's a kind of like a bigger picture, an overseeing position for all the positions we probably came up performing ourselves, and we can fulfill the role in many cases, and we're doing it in a lot of places already, but we just don't have the title. So your perspective on that is important. I don't think we talk enough about that in the industry. It's just, you know, performance director and overseeing everything. Okay, well, what does that mean? You know, what does that role have to do? You know, so I appreciate that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Ray, thank you so much for your time. We both greatly appreciate it. Do you have any final thoughts, ask of the audience, places where people can reach you?
No, I appreciate you guys having me on. You know, I don't do a lot of these. You know, I'm not in the public eye very much, as you see. I'm not on internet or anything else. But I'm very happy and open. My email address is very simple, powerbear33@yahoo.com. If there's a strength coach out there that would love to reach out and talk, I'd be more than happy to talk, you know, with them and talk shop and anything I can do to help. So I appreciate you guys having me on. Thank you very much.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. It was great.
Yeah. Likewise. Absolutely. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. As always, you can find links to everything discussed, show notes, all of that stuff at the official website of SCAF, prohockeystrength.com. We will see you soon.